And to the speakers tonight, I just want you to know that I prayed that you don't stutter as much as I did tonight. And with that, I'm going to bring up Derek to give us a quick history on our group.
Hi, everybody. My name's Derek. I'm a real alcoholic. I want to thank the group for asking me to try and compile this and put it together. If you're curious about the shirt, I think I took literally what my sponsor said. You may be the only big book somebody finds, so that's in a level. I've been sifting through old minutes and notes and group conscience meetings to try and tack down the history of the short history of this group. So follow along. I went by year. It's not as old as my old home group, I'm trying to help tack down back to 1945. So. What we have here, I'll say a description of the founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, two descriptions. One, when they try to intermingle psychology with the spiritual message of power in California early on in the 40s, the group fell apart, and then more orthodox, members who used more orthodox methods from the book actually were able to found that area in San Francisco after they tried mixing it with psychology. So these guys who used more orthodox message from the book were able to establish that area. And the same in the Africas, when Bill describes as a foreign possession, same thing transpired. He called them book converts. So we've always had book converts who have used the more orthodox methods of the book. And the origin of this group is like that. You had two members who were looking for that message. People call them solution-based meetings, or the solution that Alcoholics Anonymous offers. And it started with our friend Phil and Sean meeting at the Valley Stream Group, and then they had a meeting here on a cold November night, freezing, and as quoted by one person, they'll remain anonymous. The person who had the vision and the key showed up late. So that was the primary purpose group's first resentment, I think. But as Clarence Snyder's quoted as saying, AA started in riots and grows in riots. And I think that's true when the Akronites came out to bust up the Cleveland group in the name of AA love. So you had Sean was here, Phil, Patty, Tommy F, Tommy N, Mike N, Lisa H, and Jeannie were the first persons that were here on that cold November night. And then the idea and the vision had spawned, and it came originally in the form of a big book meeting, big book study, led by Phil and Sean, and then a beginner's meeting where the steps were pitched and people would share how they experienced God's power or the 12 steps or how they did the 12 steps, and it took form and shape and started to grab inertia and move forward. I was told in the beginning there was no coffee here, so you can thank the coffee maker. What else? We had no anniversary party the first 2 years. So this is the second year. I think Lisa was our chair last year. So now the group takes form and inertia, and then through our group conscience and business meetings, you had a couple of service junkies here too. I'd like to add that if you want to do some real altruistic and selfless service, the areas standing special needs chairs here. So if you'd like, I can introduce you to him. You can do some real special service if you like. That was in 05. In 06, the group started to take a turn for the worse because I came here in April, May of 06. But in 2006, a lot of things had transpired. This is actually, every quarter we have a pitch meeting. We will bring in a speaker from a different county or a different state to share how they did the step. Over an hour period, and that's what we call a step pitch meeting. And tonight the anniversary is going to stay in place of the pitch meeting. The first night we had Peter N, he came into the first 6 steps, and he came back March of 07 to do the latter half of the steps. And then we had a change to our format. We had a big book study, and then we actually had the same big book study, but now an experience where people were going to share how they did the steps, and we had a reader and a leader. And then we added our Thursday night step meeting in 2006. And then that's when we decided to start handing out the pocket edition of the big book. And it's taken. We used to go up to the intergroup office and get a few at a time. And then we started buying them by the case because there was a greater discount. 40 in a case, if you didn't know. So we'd order actually 100 at a time, because that was a deeper discount at $308 a book. And then in 2006, we decided as a group to continue that pattern of handing out big books for free. And I can guarantee you, because I was a literature rep for a while, that we've handed out a tick above 500 books so far, which is great. And then 2007, we decided to keep the quarterly pitch meeting and make it a permanent thing, because it was just a great thing. And then we really locked down. I remember that meeting, and I went over and sifted through the notes today, actually, to the beginner step series that we have here Tuesday night, if you've never been here for that. It started in October, went through November, December, and then January, February, we had a group conference, a lot of business meetings, and nailed down exactly what we were going to talk about, and that was the 12 steps over a four-week period. It was a lot of talking. And I think, which was cutting edge and on the forefront, the group had decided to construct and put up a website. And in 2008, we pitched it, and for the latter half of 2007, it came up, and it had 850 hits in January 2008, and then 1,500 hits by March 2008. I think it was a month, if I don't stand corrected. And then at that time, also in 2008, we decided to start ordering big books at 100 at a time, because we were going through so many. And at the very same time, we elected, and we have a treatment liaison who co-coordinates with four chair members who hold big book studies in different treatment facilities and halfway houses to give out those big books also in those halfway houses. And that's what attributed to that number also. So if you're curious where your dollar's going in the basket in this group, believe it or not, that's where a majority of our money goes, to keep the venue and hand out those books. So now we have our treatment facilities liaison and our meetings, and we adopted and elected to have a quarterly workshop, either an archive or a service workshop. We're going to have Billy come in and do, he served as the archivist for North Jersey, to do a workshop of pictorial history of AA. He goes all the way through the 30s up to the present time, which is going to be great. And Denise is our chair of that committee, so if you want to talk to her, you can. So as of this point, we've had about 2,500 hits on our website, mostly to hear the speakers on the website. And also, if you want to hear the past speakers, Peter, speaking on all 12 steps, Eddie B., Ron G., Roy T., Chris S., they're all on the website, too, and that's where the most hits have come from, was listening to the speakers. And then lastly, and I know Ray confirmed this, he's been around almost 30 years, the first time I ever saw, we had somebody bringing up a cake for an anniversary, and he actually fell over the cake. The first time I've ever seen that, I was like, I had to put that in there. That's the first time. So, that being said, you know, mentioning all the speakers, and this is being recorded tonight, so, the speaker you can hear on the website also, so I was told I should just introduce Luis. I know Luis did a couple of four-step workshops at Bart, my old home group, the Bart group, so I think you're in for a treat. So I'm going to ask Luis F. to come up.
Been laughing, I haven't said anything yet. Good evening, everybody. My name is Luis Vargas. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
And I guess just take a deep breath, and I want to thank the Power Greater Than Ourselves for just another moment in this blessed thing called recovery. I'm an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. I know most of you are familiar with that term. And we're going to spend some time talking about that. I was told I have 45 minutes or so. Wow. It's going to be scary. But before we do that, I got some housekeeping to do, all right? First off, a couple of things. A couple of Fridays ago, I'm at a commitment that I do on Friday nights, and somebody asked me if I'm Luis Vargas, and I said yes, and they said, yeah, I hear you speaking over there at Lynbrook, Primary Purpose. I said, yeah, yeah. And then they told me that there was a flyer going around, which I haven't seen yet. with my name on it, and two overriding thoughts came to my head. The first one was, I guess they don't want anybody to show up. And then the other one was, do I have top billing?
And it's very scary what goes on in your head. The other thing, and I appreciate hearing the history of the group, because I've watched it grow from afar. So on a more serious note, I actually need to make an amends to this group, because somewhere in that arc of a story, which is really a beautiful story, I must admit, I had not necessarily caught a resentment, but I had coined the term Big Book and Beyond, you know. And the reason, I had basically used that as a way of referring to this group. And so some people are laughing. I want you to know, before we get too much, there are a couple of guys planted in the crowd that are going to clear a way for me out of here if I have to go out of the door. So, don't get too happy. The thing is my sponsor was, may he rest in peace, the person that took me through the work, was very controversial in nature. You either loved him or hated him. He loved to make a show, but he really knew how to deliver that message. And he was down and dirty, you know. And so my steps were given to me down and dirty, and I kind of still live in that down and dirty. In fact, somebody made a comment to me, and this is, hopefully you don't find this offensive, but somebody made, they invited you to speak here. That's like serving pork at a bar mitzvah. I gotta tell you that, there's all these thoughts going in my head, but I want this group to know that I've been blessed in recovery to see groups start from, the few that opened the doors and see it blossom. My first home group was Steps by the Book on Union Turnpike in Flushing. I believe, I'm not sure, I'm not a historian, but I believe we were the first Big Book Experience meeting in Queens. And that was the Wild West back then. And our business meetings were shouting matches and screaming and carrying on, and it was all out of love. But it was remarkable to see that group grow. And the reason it grew, and there's a theme here, the reason it grew is because it was solutions oriented. We stuck to the Big Book as best as we could. We didn't do it perfectly, God knows that. But we were grounded in that program. And as a result, people came. And that group had great success until it closed, when my sponsor's health was such that he couldn't keep the store open any longer. And then another group in Valley Stream, which was from a different fellowship, but still grounded in the Big Book. We had our Friday night meeting in Valley Stream over there at St. Robert's Church. Is it St. Robert? I forget the church. It doesn't matter. Blessed Sacrament. So I'm off a few syllables. That was another meeting that was based on the Big Book and actually reached a point where it was almost going to close. And then it had a renaissance, and the Friday nights were kind of like this every Friday night. And there was really something to see. And although I have not been a member of this group, I have been blessed to come on occasion, and I've been lucky that it just seemed that I always came on anniversary nights, and to hear the stories of people who heard the message for the first time in this room, and all kinds of stories. People have been in the room for years and years and years, who were suffering miserably in sobriety. From those types of stories to people who came off the street or out of their 20th detox, finally somebody offered them a solution, and I've heard these stories right in this room, and it's a testimony to the power of this program, the power of God as it works through those of you who are members of this group. So I want to make that amends about Big Book and Beyond, because I've actually come to really appreciate this group. So that's all the housekeeping. And
I got your back, man.
Okay. Somebody was asking me if I was going to be nervous, but after watching Sean open the meeting, I said, not anymore. So, yeah. So, anyway, what's my experience? My experience is that this whole recovery business, which I'm still a beginner in, what has been revealed to me is that this has always been about me as an individual, and I will turn it around and just say you as an individual and your relationship with a power greater than yourself. That sums up the solution. Now, I didn't walk in like that. I suffered horribly from alcoholism for a couple of decades. I exhibited alcoholic tendencies at a very, very early age. And my whole life was basically the bonds that basically are the story of my teenage years into my early adulthood, into what should have been mature adulthood, was dominated by drugs and alcohol. And as a result, I suffered horribly. When I say I'm an alcoholic of the hopeless variety, I'm a person who is beyond human aid. Okay? And I'll just go through some of the qualification. I had the greatest desire to stop drinking that I could summon up. Some of you know parts of my story, some of you don't. I'll tell bits and pieces here, not necessarily for drama, but to set an idea. You know, the mother of my boys, who passed away several years ago, more than several now, but, you know, I was at the end of my second failed marriage. For anybody looking for relationship advice, I'll be setting shop right after the meeting. And here I was in the midst of a second failed marriage, and on a Friday after Thanksgiving, she came to me and told me she had been diagnosed with breast cancer. And so, up to that time, I was a pretty good partier, and I always thought that I was just having a good old time. And although my drinking was interfering with many things in life, and I had already had multiple sufficient reasons to stop, because I'm not a hard drinker, those sufficient reasons weren't sufficient, quite frankly. But this event is key to my story because it was the first time in my life I really looked within myself and dug really deep. And I told myself, you know, my family needs me, my wife needs me, my boys who were little puppies then. Today was the birthday of my youngest boy. He turned 16 today, and he's taller than me. And my other boys, I have one son in the Marine Corps, and the other one's a second lieutenant in the Army, and they will whip my ass. Oh, excuse my language. But they're not puppies anymore, that's the point. But at the time, they were, and they needed me. And I knew they needed me. And I also knew intuitively that drinking was interfering with me being the person I should be. Because you know what? For me anyway, I wasn't raised to be the way I was turning out. And I knew better. I intuitively knew better. I'm not one of these people that's going to come up here and tell you that, you know, I was raised by, you know, neglectful parents and that didn't try to instill any morals or pass on any lessons of life. That wasn't my story. You know, I came from a household that I knew better. And yet, I found myself living a lifestyle that was in complete contradiction to what I was raised by. So, knowing that, and realizing that this was a critical time in my life, I dug deep. I dug really deep. And I said the prayer of prayers, and I even recited, there's a line from St. Paul, it's probably the only line in the Bible I know, and this is not a religious program, I'm a seeker, and if I can find
a glimpse of truth in whatever tradition, I'll hold on to it. But one truth that was speaking to me at the time was, you know, when I became a man, I put childish things away. And it was time to put childish things away and kind of, you know, grow up. And you know what? I didn't drink or drug for 3 whole days. Yeah. I know it sounds funny, but it really is pretty tragic, because that was a Friday. My wife's condition was very serious, and because she was a nurse at LIJ and she kind of had inside contacts, that Monday they operated on her. So I was sober Saturday, Sunday, and then most of Monday, until when I took her in, they wheeled her in, and the doctor said, you know, she's going to be in there for 12, 14 hours. Why don't you get some rest and we'll call you? Now, I had my sister-in-law at the time watching the boys, and I walked out of that hospital, and I wanted to go straight home, but I never made it. You see what I'm saying? And I showed up in the recovery room, you know, all buzzed out and unable to, with dry mouth and stinking. And here was a woman that had been through this horrific surgery, half doped out through medication and painkillers, and yet she even knew something was up with me. You see? And I also knew then that there was something terribly wrong with me, because how could I do this? Like, how can you do this? You see, like the big book talked about, it never occurred to me that I wouldn't be able to stop drinking once I made up my mind to stop. You know, there's this great line in the chapter, There's a Solution, and it talks about that the greatest desire to stop drinking is of absolutely no avail, and that most of us pass into this state long before we suspect it. See, I had not realized that I had already crossed some imaginary line that made it virtually impossible for me to stop. I had no knowledge of that. I lived in total ignorance to what alcoholism is. And you know how ignorant I am? My brother died in September of 90 from alcoholism. And I remember at his funeral saying, why can't you just party on weekends? There's a lot of deaths in my family's history, because most of us were wiped out, and you would ask, was it war? Was it some kind of plague? And no, it was alcoholism. Wiped out a whole generation of my family. Myself and my other cousin are the only survivors from that generation. But that's not really germane to the story. I just wanted to show that as a backdrop of how ignorant I actually was to the true nature of what alcoholism is. And that's another thing. I'm going to jump around all over the place, because I don't have a prepared text, Phil. Sorry. The thing that's scary about alcoholism, if for you who are newcomers, or maybe those of you who are sitting here and maybe you're telling yourself that you've done your, you know, you did your checklist today and therefore you're immune, or somehow you have that reprieve, the thing about that is that I walked in here, I had no clue how sick I truly was. I didn't have a clue. So here I was, this horrific situation in my family life. I'm starting to wonder, what the heck is wrong with me? Now, I didn't seek help or anything, because that would have just made too much sense. Because like most alcoholics, what I did is, just like Bill's story, renewing my resolve, I tried again. I tried again. Listen, man, most of us here are Americans, right? And, you know, you get knocked off the bike. I grew up in Brooklyn. You see, you get knocked down, what happens? You got to get up. You don't get up, you're going to get stomped. So I got up and try again. So I find myself living in that place that they talk about in A Vision for You, where that jumping off place, where you can't live with the drink or without it. And for about 2 years, approximately, I was using against my will. And in that period of time, there were times when I would have to drop my wife off for treatment and tell her I'd be right back and never make it back. There were times, one time in particular, I was in the fetal position in the shower. I thought that, and I'm sorry, I had to watch my language. I typically do. I didn't realize there was a little guy here. I didn't realize that, you know, here I was in the bathtub, and my heart was pounding because I was under this impression that I was my heart was going to explode. I'm not a specialist, and I don't mean that to poke fun, but alcoholism takes me to other places, you know what I'm saying, and other things, two different things to the body, and one of these things was my heart was beating like a million miles an hour, and I was convinced that I was going to have a heart attack. And I was in the fetal position while the water was pouring down on me, and I'm telling myself, dear God, please, just don't let me die in the bathtub. Just don't let me die in the bathtub. And if I could just survive, I swear, I'm done. I'm done. Because we all reach that moment of truth when we say, I can't do this anymore. And, you know, I did it. I survived.
Build up for debate, I understand.
Oh, I didn't realize that. This is me recorded?
Okay, now I'm nervous. I guess those hits on the website are going to start going down now. But, so anyway, I'm there in the tub, and I found, you know, obviously I didn't have a heart attack, and I go to work, and the big book talks about, you know, that at times, right, the alcoholic cannot bring to his memory with sufficient force the pain, the misery, the suffering, and I'll add the degradation, the humiliation of a week or a month ago, and I'm paraphrasing there. Where's Roy T. when we need him? But I'm not talking about a week later, a month later. Hours later, I was back at it again. You see, I had completely forgotten that I had sworn just hours ago that if I can survive, I will never do this again. You know what I'm saying? That's what we mean by a hopeless alcoholic. I think I qualified by that. Once I began, I could not stop. And I could never, ever stay stopped. And it didn't matter. It really did not matter what was going on, what was important. And I suffered from not only the illness, but a lot of guilt, a lot of shame. Because, again, I lived in ignorance. You know, we do a lot of things. Most of us, I know I've done a lot of things that I'm not very proud of while I was out there. I've done some things in recovery I'm not very proud of. But I'm talking about out there, stupid to levels never known possible. And I thought that somehow I was lacking of moral character, that there was something that I was morally deficient in some way. Simply put, I just wasn't man enough to do the right thing. It never occurred to me that I suffered from an illness. You see, and that's the grave, let's talk about the grave nature of alcoholism. It's an illness. In my experience, it doesn't care what you got going on, what's important to you, what your moral standards may or may not be, or how much you want to stop, or whether you choose that morning that you're not going to drink today, which if any of you out here like that, I want you to talk to me after the meeting because I have no idea how that's possible. For the alcoholic of the hopeless valley I'm talking about now. But there were many a day I chose that day not to use. Many a day. And I begged the God of my understanding, please, to get me through a 24-hour period without doing it. And guess what? I drank anyway.
And there were many types of weather. There were beautiful days. There were rainy days. There were cloudy days, snowy days. There were blizzards. There was all kinds. Any kind of feeling, the whole spectrum of human emotions, I drank and drug under. Well, it's for me anyway, that tells me my drinking and drugging had nothing to do with my feelings. And I know that in some areas, and not necessarily this group, I know that we spend a lot of time talking about our feelings, and I would ask you to look at that. But anyway, that's off the topic. Obviously, you guys didn't hear me share at JC's first anniversary. I would have never been invited. Anyway, that being said, that was my experience with alcoholism, the illness. Ignorance, complete servitude to the drink, complete enslavement to the thought of the drink. Because even when I wasn't drinking, I was thinking about drinking or figuring out how not to drink. And that was the nature of my existence. And there's not much more that can be said about that other than, like I said, I was at the end of two failed marriages at that point. I was not quite $70,000 in credit card debt, and that's after I spent every penny I had. So anybody looking for financial advice, I also provide that service too.
Peter, you know,
I'll be happy to, you know, walk you through your finances. I work in telecommunications, and that being said, I still don't know how to use my cell phone. But I had been blessed by having good employers, and yet I was in a situation where I was on my third job in 6 months because, like a good alcoholic, I always quit before they could find me. A few times I was asked to resign. So I shouldn't say I always quit. Sometimes they say, would you please resign? And so I've had some experience there. So if you're looking to get ahead in business or succeed, that's another counseling session that I'm running. So that was my qualifications when I walked in. In May of 1996, I went to a rehab, and I got what I call the 8-day cure. I gained 15 pounds. I got to catch up on a heck of a lot of sleep. And you're talking about somebody who is literally at the end of a 26-year run, right? I was physically and mentally pretty beat up as a human being goes. But I got the cure. For 8 days I was in this place, and got separated. They told me to go make a meeting, and I went to a meeting, and I went to a meeting in June then, June of 1996. I attended a meeting in a different fellowship where I heard a man share that he had 15 years and that he has his ATM program that he only allows him to carry withdraw 20 bucks at a time because that's how he kept from the next one, by limiting the amount of cash he had in his pocket. And I told myself, I went home that night thinking, geez, man, this is really going to be a battle. How the heck am I going to do this? This guy's got 15 years and he still has his own ATM card program so that he can only take out 20 bucks a month, 20 bucks a day, rather. And, of course, I was doo-doo for brains. I didn't know any better. And I was attending meetings where there was a lot of emphasis on what was going on, how we were feeling that day. Lots of hugs and stuff when they gave out the chips, and lots of talking about how we feel. And I was pretty ignorant, and I thought that if I read How It Works, that somehow I was doing the steps.
Of course, I didn't want to do all the steps. There were some reservations with some of these conditions. But I was more than happy to try to read the, how it works at the beginning of the meeting. I was always like, please, please, I'll do it. Because I thought that by reading the material, somehow I was doing something for my recovery. Total ignorance. With a recovery, that was my recovery program. So if anybody wants to work my program, that's another thing I'd be happy to afterwards. This was this program, to suffice to say, was not very successful. It wasn't long before I started dibbling and dabbling, and you know, and slowly but surely. And I want to make another point. In May of 96, I said that I was physically and mentally wiped out. But there was an element to this illness that we haven't really talked about, the spiritual element, that had not even come close to being defeated. Because when I went into my first meeting, I can make fun of the poor guy with the $20, which is really sad when you think about it, that somebody could be in the rooms for 15 years and still has to police himself like that. That's really a tragic story. And I can make fun about reading how it works and all of that. But the fact of the matter is, as I look at my own behavior, I wasn't prepared to completely give myself over to quote-unquote this simple program. I was still looking to see how I was going to do this my way. You know what I'm saying? I was going to take what I want and leave the rest, or whatever that phrase is. It's like, you know, I want a BLT, hold the mayo, you know. Yeah, I'll have some recovery, hold that false stuff, please. I certainly don't want to pay the money back for that immense thing. And you know. So anyway, that was my attitude, you know. So in August, and I'm very specific about certain dates because this was my oldest son's birthday, August 30th, 1996. I was actually employed with my current employer, and I had actually just started there at the beginning of the month in August. I was actually pretty fortunate. These people, I had worked for them before, and I was a quality worker, and they had been begging me to come back for a couple of years, because when I left the first time, you know, the story was that I was wrong, but the truth of the matter was that my alcoholism was interfering with my work. But they didn't know that. And so some people who then were, basically they rose through the ranks and they were in some managerial positions, they were trying to do me right, and they had been asking me to come back for a couple of years. And finally now I was so desperate, I actually went back to work for these folks in August. And part of the thing was is direct deposit, and you know, again, financial advice, here it comes. But what's this all got to do with my story? Well, it has a lot to do with my story, because when I got direct deposit, by this time my wife had taken me, I didn't have my name on the account anymore. This poor woman was trying to hold on to every penny she could to feed three kids, and you know, I was going through money like water, and I wasn't on the bank account anymore. So I couldn't do direct deposit. And when I called her in righteous indignation, you know, I need to be on the bank account so I can get direct deposit, and she refused. I mean, she had a lot of nerve, because hadn't I been almost sober, not quite, except for a couple of weekends since May? This kind of leads to something that's a very shameful thing. So I won't get into a lot of detail, but I came home that was a Friday. It was my son's birthday. And I come home and hear all these kids with the little birthday caps on, and the cake is at the table, and I am a raving lunatic, like an animal, okay? And I did some things that I don't need to get into detail, but I was going to get my hands on that bank card, and this poor woman wasn't giving it up, and I had to be my way. I happen to be twice her size, so I actually got my hands on the bank card, if you get my drift.
So August 30th, I went out, and this time I wanted to die. I swear to God. I didn't know anything else but just please blot out this existence. It has amounted to nothing. My life has amounted to... The only thing I know is to drink and get high and to carouse around with as they would say in the big book, with women that you may not necessarily want to let your friends know about. So anyway, so I went out and I tried to kill myself, and I succeeded. The fact of the matter is I succeeded. Now, it took 6 weeks, mind you. But these 6 weeks were the blackest time of my life. You know, there is this place somewhere in step one that I think most of us reach, which we can't really define in words, but you know. And I don't want to say you know like intellectually know, but I know here. And I went to that place. And, you know, it's almost like a flame that I'm touching now as I'm thinking about, and it's a flame I think we need to keep alive, like my sister. But that's a different story as we talk a little more. So when I tell you that I tried to kill myself and succeeded, I did succeed. See, because on October 23rd, 1996, that would be, so we had the end of August, all of September, a good part of October, of this continual run, this death run. Just God, let me die. You know, I mean, like, you know, like, the sun is coming up again. What? I just can't face another moment of this. Why don't I just die? So on October 23rd, my excuse that time was the Yankees were in the World Series, and they had it. Unlike you younger generation who are spoiled who think the Yankees go to the World Series every year, that was not the case for me growing up. This was actually one of those occasions where, you know, let's, you know, we have to celebrate. So that was my reasoning that night. And somewhere along that process, I collapsed, passed out, and as I've told many people here who know me very well, I passed out and I woke up. It was pitch black. You know how it gets dark early in October. And I woke up and the room was pitch black. And for whatever reason, when I opened my eyes, I said out loud, I feel like I've just woken up from the dead. And a curious feeling overcame me, a sensation or a presence that actually I had woken up from the dead. Because somehow, and I can't tell you how, I can't explain in words how, that person that existed prior to that had actually died. The next day was Thursday, October 24th, which I consider my sober date. That was 4,815 days ago. I went to work and explained to my boss for the last time why I was out, had called in sick, of course, on the 23rd. Ironically, I know you guys find this very difficult to believe, but that's the last day I've ever called in sick. My life started October 24th, 1996. I dared not go home after work. I went straight to a meeting. And something was different. And what was different was that I had a willingness that I'd never before even, I can't even begin to describe. You see? And now suddenly anything, somebody had told me, Luke, just get in the back, stand on your head, and that's what you need to do. I would have done it.
Unfortunately, I wasn't dealing with people that did voodoo, what we call voodoo steps. I had people who had a working knowledge of this program, and they didn't tell me to do that, because otherwise my head, I'd have a terrible headache and my head would be flat as a pancake. But I was fortunate. When I came home that night, I put down on my, you know, we had a thing on the wipe on the kitchen for the groceries, and I've told this story before, so I know some of you have heard it. But the point is I came home and I wrote, today, thanks to the power of God, I have one day sober. You see? And that's why I know I have 4,815 days today, because not a day goes by when I don't update that calendar. And what I want to say now before we talk more to the practical program of action is that we don't, sometimes I think, at least for me, we lose touch of the true miracle that recovery really is. We get arrogant. I get arrogant. I start to think that I know how this program works. I start to think that I actually have something to do with my recovery. Because our program of action is filled of things that we need to do, all kinds of instructions in those 164 pages. And I get this idea that if I do these things, that somehow I'm doing something that brings about this miracle called recovery. And my challenge for everyone tonight is that that premise is false. If you're an addict or alcoholic of the hopeless variety, then lack of power is your dilemma. And it says somewhere in How It Works, and geez, where the heck is Roy when we need him? Because it says, without his help, there's no way we can do it. Do what? There's no way you can survive. Forget about not drink. Without his aid, it's impossible to even bring about the next breath that fills your lungs. I am totally powerless. It is so flat. The recovery claim is flat. We are all equally powerless right now in this breath, in this moment. I don't care how much time you have. We're all equally powerless because it tells us that there's one who has all power. One who has all power, not one who has some of the power when it comes to alcoholism. Think about it. Somehow I start walking around thinking that I've done something to make this happen. Because I got sick and tired of being sick and tired. BS. I got sick and tired of being sick and tired a decade before I got sober. That wasn't sufficient. And I'm afraid to go back there. I gotta remember that because if I don't remember that, I'm gonna go back there. I'm afraid to go back there. What does fear have to do with any good? No alcoholic worth his salt is gonna be stopped by any fear. I gotta keep it green because if I don't remember what it's like. Remember, I remind you again, there are a couple of guys in the crowd. I will be able to get out of here in one piece. Here's another one. I choose not to drink today. Yeah, right. And then the saddest one of all, I don't want to use. So? What does that have to do with anything? I don't want to drink. Yeah, and? Think of the foundation that you're building your recovery on. Is it sand or is it rock? Is it built on one who has all power? Or, like Phil and I always talk about, is my recovery room service? You know, we're going to get a fancy suite in the Waldorf,
And when I need God to clean up a little bit, I get pick up the phone. Hey, I got a mess in the bathroom in room 502. Come up and get that cleaned up for me. You know, I love to pray and meditate. It's something that really gets my day going. It's something that I enjoy doing. It's something that allows me, God bless you on the truth. It's just something that, you know, we don't want to get into too much detail because it's a personal matter, prayer, meditation, but I love doing it. But that in itself does not bring about the need to change. Again, I challenge you. What is that that brings about that recovery? Now, if it was something you could do of yourself, then it wouldn't be a miracle. We wouldn't be celebrating this meeting. Because it truly is, what we're celebrating is the miracle of recovery, how it manifests through us weak human beings with all our frailties and shortcomings. Somehow a supreme being can still use us for some purpose, and we can help another person who's sick and suffering despite ourselves. Again, what are you doing to bring about this miracle? Nothing. It wouldn't be a miracle if you were doing something. You wouldn't be alcoholic if you could do something. I mean, think about it. Yes, there's a program of action. There are tools that we have been handed by the founders of this fellowship. This is a 12-step meeting. Heck, we'd best be talking 12 steps. Understood. These tools are vital, but they're just that. They're tools that, for me, put us in touch with the power that solves the problem. I used to be meaner when my earlier recovery. I mean that, we all grow. It's a constant process. We all today made a good beginning. I've made a good beginning. That's all I've got. And we have to grow in effectiveness. And so there was a time when maybe I would use a lot more harsher language because I didn't know any better. I had not grown in effectiveness. But about this particular matter, I challenge you. I'm not ready to compromise on the premise that recovery for me has been a journey in powerlessness. Embracing the idea that of myself I am nothing, that without that connection to the supreme being, this being that I cannot even begin to understand, comprehend, or relate to, in some way that I can say for sure, with the certainty of like a straight line from A to B, this is what keeps me not only sober, but keeps the air in my lungs. I challenge anyone in this room to think about their own recovery and what's it really based on. Because I hear it all the time. People come in and out, and this is not about coming in and out. I'm talking about somebody who comes in and says, I know what I need to do now. You know what you need to do? How could you possibly know what you need to do? This is about you and a relationship with a supreme being who we can't even begin to put our arms around. Then how could you possibly know what that's about? How do I know?
Oh, I've got to do a more thorough 4-step.
Oh, really? You see, the steps, we're linear, and I'm sorry, it's the second time I've knocked over your sign here. We're trapped. We're linear. The steps are 1 through 12, we read them that way. But they're not separate things in themselves, they're a whole. That's what that circle around the triangle represents. It's a whole process. Not one step more important than the other.
I've got to do a thorough 4-step. I wasn't thoroughly honest.
What are you talking about? I mean, it's not like we're going to pull something out of the air and you're going to stick it in and somehow that fills some void. Like this is some recipe that we have. It's not a recipe per se. It's a process, I would say. And am I playing with words? Yes. But that's because we're trapped. We don't have any other way to try to relate something that, by definition, we can't relate.
We're trying to describe and talk about something that by definition is beyond words. So yes, the tools are just that. Tools that allowed me to get in touch with something that I can't even begin to explain that solved my problem. There's a Hindu verse, and I told you I'm all over the book, place when it comes to that. I insult most religions equally. And the phrase is something along, I'm paraphrasing. A God of your understanding by definition can't be God. I cannot understand the Supreme Being. I think we get like a glimpse. You know, they built that whole atomic trap thing where they split the atom, and what a scientist. They built this thing for $1 trillion. They spin this thing around at speeds, high speeds, and they smash these items, and there's a little, and they get this flash of something. And I think that's what we get. Like we get a flash of something. It's a glimpse of some reality. And for me, the tools are that, tools just that. Tools that allow us to get in touch with that something that we can't begin to describe. Yes, it's a 12-step program. Yes, this is the process that we all agree to. It's the solution to our problem. This is the path we follow. No, this is a path, mind you. It's a very tricky book, you know, Broad Highway. I'm streaming along. Oh, yeah, join us on the Broad Highway. And I'm streaming along. I feel like, you know, what is that movie with the Tin Man and the Sea? And I'm stringing along on this broad highway. But what happens to that broad highway? Because the path. Very narrow. Let me tell you, there were about 10,000 monkeys living in my brain when I walked into these rooms. And now there's about 3 gorillas left. Still some noise there. I still got to keep coming. So where am I going with all this? I was blessed. I came in. I didn't realize it was a miracle, of course. And I came in. I was willing to do anything anyone told me to do. And I was very, very blessed because without much ado, I met my sponsor, who had enough humility, despite all his arrogance, to not take me through his program, but to take me through the program. And I know this sounds egocentric, because we don't have a monopoly on recovery. And think about it, how could we? If it's about you and a relationship with a supreme being, who has the monopoly on that? What, AA suddenly the sole distributor of that power? You know, obviously not. But this is the process this fellowship practices. This is the process that worked for me. You may have another process which worked for you, which is fine. But we need to have a common language and a common process. So we use the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, our basic text. And he had enough humility to take me through that from the title page right through and including page 164. And this has been the way of life that I've adopted since then. And a wholesale miracle has taken place in my life. I was able to raise those 3 boys. You know, like I said, 2 of them are in the military. You know, my wife eventually passed away from her illness. May she rest in peace. But I was able to make a semblance of, you know, you can't repair all the damage. But some, there was enough repair done that by the time it was her time, she trusted me with her children. You understand? I've been blessed by, you know, remarrying and finding a partner for life, somebody who is my, you know, my deepest confidant. And through that union, I now have a daughter, which is God's way of course getting even, right?
Because, you know, I only do boys, and we only have boys in my family, and, you know, and suddenly, and, you know, what is this?
So, I gotta keep coming, because I thought I knew everything there was about raising children, and I realized, once again, I don't know anything. And that's how we should keep it. And
and this process. And Phil, how much time do I got? A few yawns. But through the process, there's lots of things. You know, I used to live in the bathroom, and I used to talk about all the places. Oh, you know that book, Dr. Seuss, All the Places You Will Go. And all the places we will go. And I never left the bathroom. And I've been blessed, man. I travel, and I'm not a world traveler because I just my own stuff. I believe I should see my own country before I go somewhere else. And I've basically been virtually in every state and most national parks. And this is something that I would have never dreamed possible. You see what I'm saying? The gifts of recovery are just boundless, and we could spend another hour talking about that. But I've had to stay grounded in this process, and by staying grounded in it, despite my shortcomings and my frailties and the inconsistent behavior that I've exhibited in the past, it's still a process of design for living that has kept me going through difficult times, good times, and indifferent. And we don't do this process once. You know, the book talks about a business that doesn't take regular inventory usually goes broke. That doesn't mean I did a doorstep in 1996 and, you know, it's 2009, brother. You know, it's got to be something going on here. So this is a process I try to stay grounded in. I do through repetition and try to do constantly over and over again. And, of course, the greatest gift, and as much as I love my sponsor, and I've got another sponsor, but I still think of Eric as my sponsor, even though he's been gone now 4 years. As grateful as I am to him, and everybody knows how much I love him, this is not a eulogy or anything, I will tell you that the true pillars of my true teachers in recovery have been those of you who gave me the privilege, I say the privilege, of taking you through this work. Because you have been my greatest teachers. The people of these rooms have been the greatest teachers. You know, this is not something that you get from, you know, there's that whole dynamic that can sometimes work where an individual, maybe they're charismatic or they have a way about them and they can carry a message, and we think that it's about the individual. It's about the process, about the relationship with God. And if we're not working one-to-one with another alcoholic, I don't know how you're staying sober. Like, I honestly can't fathom how it's possible. Because it says in my big book, it says that it's vital to permanent recovery, strenuous work. These are the terms used. Now, what is it saying? Nothing ensures immunity than constant work with another alcoholic. Carry this message, which causes people to get up and leave the room sometimes, which is okay.
I'm only teasing.
Because if somebody's not uncomfortable by hearing the truth, then there's something not quite right. So this has been a beautiful process. It has done just, you know, it's just, you know, I now have a life worth living. Okay. And I've gone through all kinds of things. I could cite many examples in life, good times and bad times, that this process has carried me through. And to bring it back to where we kind of started, it comes down to, you know, that triangle once again, where at the base we have this program, right? And then we have that unity. You see, and what's, you know, another thing being celebrated here is the unity. And I know a lot of people think unity is, you know, oh yeah, unity. I go to a meeting, I'm in the fellowship. You know, I go, we have coffee after the meeting, we go to the diner, we have a bowling league even. You know, we have picnics in the summer, and all of that is good. But you see, until you've experienced the spiritual awakening, then the book talks about, then you are joined in harmonious brotherhood with your fellow travelers. As we shoulder by shoulder, I forget the book I said, but we journey together. That's unity. That's the unity we're talking about. See? And of course, the service,
which is, you know, somebody made the coffee and the cake and the this, and they had the food, and all it had is wonderful service, all of it important. But this group, this room wouldn't be full because of good food. There are lots of restaurants out there, okay, that you can get food. The service that's been done by this group is to carry the message to the alcoholic who's still suffering. That's the real service of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's why the room is full. Not because we all suffer from the same condition, but because we have the same solution. And that's what we celebrate tonight. And so I thank all of you for your patience with me and your tolerance. And I want to say that if there has been any newcomers here, I know I might have almost implied that somehow the steps weren't important, to the contrary. But the relationship with the Supreme Being is number one.
Yes.
Let's not fall in love with the tool too much. Right? Let's not fall in love with the, you know, I love the book, but I'm not in love with the book. I'm in love with my Creator. And so if you're a newcomer, there were a bunch of hands that were raised at the beginning of the meeting. Don't leave tonight without getting connected with someone who has the experience to not be your guru or lend you money or drive you around, but who can pass on this message, these tools, this spiritual toolkit, so that you can then enter a relationship with a Supreme Being who will solve your problem. God bless you on the truth.